Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally, 7 days a week in more than 100 countries around the world over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the richest nation on Earth when we come back. You know, in 1787, the writers of our Constitution put in this clause at Article 1, Section 10, 17 words. It says, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt." Now, that clause follows the biblical injunction on just weights and balances that we see in Leviticus 19, verses 35 and 36. But private business is carried on in gold and silver coin. It's public business that is conducted in commercial paper. Commercial paper are things like stocks and bonds and Federal Reserve notes and credit cards and debt and usury, things like that. In 1965, our Congress said that there is no difference in the value of gold and silver coin and the currency and clad coin that we all carry in our pockets. And you know that's true. When we're dealing with banks, government, and commercial industries. But out here in the real marketplace, there's a 7-to-1 difference in the purchasing power, and there's a 7-to-1 difference in the taxes due on that paper money over gold. Now, you know, God and our founding fathers didn't give us gold and silver coin for no good purpose. They knew that as a matter of law, gold and silver coin was absolutely necessary for us, that's you and I, to deal in order for us, you and I, to establish our property rights. Well, our Congress and our politicians didn't take our gold and silver coin away from us for no good reason. They knew, and they knew full well back in 1933 that if they were going to subjugate a free people, they would first have to take away the people's gold and silver coin in order to take away the people's property rights and to destroy those property rights. Now, if you and I intend to regain those rights, duties, and capacities, then we're going to have to regain our property and property rights. And that's because property, just that one word, property, it's the legal foundation for all of our liberties. It is the holy grail of Anglo-Saxon administration. So let me teach you how to do just that in our business school, which is now on compact disc for adult homeschoolers. Now, if you'd like more information about our private business school, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package first. That's the place to start. It's free. It didn't cost you anything. Maybe this isn't for you. But it's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. And it's informative, it's entertaining, it's educational. Best of all, it's free. You can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, our business school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. It's an easy one, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, the richest nation on Earth. I was watching the Larry News Hour the other night, and this young woman said that our national health care system is a shambles, it's a disgrace, and that there are at least 10 other industrialized nations that have a better health care system than we do. And that it is the right of every American to have health care insurance. I didn't know that. And I'm glad that young woman, I hope she went to college and has a degree after her name so I can rely upon her. Give her a quotation here. I don't know her name, but she was on Lair the other night, and she made those comments. Now, I'm an old country boy, and I didn't know I had a right to health care insurance. I was a stranger, I guess, and didn't arrive at the station on time. I always thought that when I went out in the marketplace to buy something, whether it's health care insurance or carpet or television set or something else, that it was up to me to go out and work. produce the money, and then go out in the marketplace and use my own free will and decide upon how I wanted to spend my money. And if it was healthcare insurance, I'd buy it. And if I didn't buy it, well, then that was my choice. And they went on to point out that there was 44 million Americans that don't have healthcare insurance. Well, I don't know if that's true or false, but hell, I think there's 44 million Americans that don't have a Rolls Royce. And I failed to see what the connection was. Now, I don't have healthcare insurance. And I have studiously worked hard to avoid healthcare insurance for more than 60 years. I mean, I get up in the morning with a dreaded terror that somebody is going to impose healthcare insurance upon me. And I worry about it. And I've avoided it all these years. I don't want it. And I'm trying to stay away from it. I mean, it's like a dog poop on your shoe, you know. Once you step in it, you just can't get it off, you know. Smells like hell and you can't get rid of it. And here's this young woman. She's out here voting for Hillary and Barack. And she's telling us that we've got a right to this health care insurance and that we live in the wealthiest, richest nation in the world. And I listened to that statement, the richest nation in the world. And I said to myself, what in the hell has this girl been smoking? Honest to God, does that woman believe that? I mean, she's not a girl. She's not a kid. I mean, this woman had to be 30 years old. I've got children, you know, that are older than that. If I had a kid say that to me, I'd slap them up alongside the head, knock some sense back into their heads. I'd say, have I raised a fool? Where have you been? What are you smoking? What kind of dope are you on? That girl is so far out of touch with reality that I doubt that she'll ever come back down to earth, as my old granddad used to say. It's time for me to come back down to earth. You know, as he grabbed me, shake me around a little bit, and straighten me out. Well, I got a subject to talk about, and so I'm going to talk about it. And I'm going to start out here with the International Forecaster. Remember, this is put out by a guy down in Punta Gorda, Florida. His name is Bob Chapman. He's an old man, just like I am, probably older than I am. And old guys like us, we don't understand some of these terms that we're hearing now in modern America. Like, every American is entitled to health care insurance. Hell, I thought I was entitled to a Rolls Royce, and I don't understand for the life of me why the president doesn't send me a check for the $200,000 that I need to buy one. And imagine how that would stimulate the economy. I mean, can you imagine 100 million Americans descending upon their Rolls Royce dealers and ordering a Rolls Royce? I mean, imagine the employment. Can you imagine the economic stimulus that that would provide? I'm not sure that people understand where this money comes from or how it's created, where it goes, how it's used, called economics. I don't think that the average American has a grasp of economics. I'm not sure that the average American can work out the simple arithmetic involved in computing the payments on his home mortgage. You know, the people were interviewed, and they came up with this conclusion that more than half the people in America who have adjustable rate mortgages did not know what that meant. More than half. I had a man in here not too long ago, a very intelligent guy, drives a new pickup, businessman, and he has a house, and the house has an adjustable rate mortgage on it. And a big house, $500,000 house. It was an adjustable rate mortgage. I almost gasped. I had to grasp my chest and hang on to myself. I mean, if I was talking to a blue collar truck driver, you know, or a burger flipper down at McDonald's, you know, some 18-year-old kid told me he had an adjustable rate mortgage, that'd make sense. This man must be pushing 50. I didn't know that people 50. I had a Jew in here one time with a mortgage on his house. I gasped. I said to the Jew, I said, you have a mortgage on your house? He said, well, yes, it's for business purposes. So I sucked it in. I said, oh, for business purposes. Okay, well, I've been around this business for years and years. I've never heard of a Jew with a mortgage. I didn't know they allowed that in Judaism. I thought you'd get excommunicated if they found you had a mortgage on your house in a synagogue. Now, Christians can't count. Jews can. then everybody's mad as hell at the Jews because they can count and they're in control of all the banks and all the money, and everybody's mad at them because they can count, you know. And once in a while you'll run into a Christian that can count, and he doesn't have a mortgage on his house. And this woman, you know, she says, "Hey, we're in the richest nation on earth." Let me give to you a couple of numbers here. Here's a paragraph out of the International Forecaster published, let me give you the date here, 4-19-08. 4-19-08. I'm on page 10. Listen to this statement. And then let's ask ourselves, is this the richest nation in the world? And it says here, in California for March, there were 27,541 foreclosure filings, 42,704 notices of default, for a total of 70,246 early mid-stage foreclosure filings. All right, let's round that off. Last month, in March of 2008, in the one state of California, just one state, they had 70,000 houses in some stage of foreclosure. This is the killer that nobody reports. Okay, now here's the killer. Now listen to this. In February, that was the month before March, and as I speak to you here at the end of April, you know, just a couple of months back, by the time you hear this program is put out, it'll be about 2 months back in February 2008. All homes, new and existing, that's old houses and new ones, sold in the whole state were 20,513. Did you get that number, boys and girls? We got 70,000 foreclosure filings for the month of March. The month before that, in February, hell, they only sold 20,000 houses in the whole damn state. 20,000. All new home sales for the entire western region of the United States in February were only 13,000. And all existing home sales in the entire western region were only 55,000. Did you get that? New home sales, 13,000. Existing home sales, 55,000. Add those two together, 55, 65, 68,000. Boys and girls, go to the 100th meridian on the map. That's out in western Kansas. 100th meridian. And then look west. There's 11 states out there, kids. Well, there's 11 western states leaving out. Maybe it does include Alaska and Hawaii. Usually we leave those two states off. The whole western United States sold fewer houses than were foreclosed on just in 1 month in California. Kids, we haven't seen anything like that since the 1930s. And hell, even in the 1930s, I don't think we saw anything like that. Now, this girl says, we live in the richest nation in the world. We have an economic sword of Damocles hanging over our heads. And the average Joe Sixpack and this poor woman here on the Lair News Hour, they haven't got a clue as to what the hell's going on around them. Not that they ought to know, because they watch Katie Couric and Brian Williams and Brian and Katie. I'm not sure. I was going to say Brian and Katie don't have a clue as to what's going on. That's not true. Both of them belong to the CFR, making $15 million a year. They both know what's going on. They're just not reporting it. And it reminded me, you know, there was a movie some years back, and it was the plot of the movie was there was a disease inside this town. And when you got this disease, you just fell over dead. And a highly contagious disease, Lassa fever, Ebola or something. Terrible disease. In this town, probably 10, 15,000 people, just a little small rural town out in the middle of Kansas, I guess, someplace. And so, as soon as the word got out that this disease, you know, was fatal and it was something that nobody could recognize, you know, people are coming into the hospital. So the hospital doctors, they put the hush hush, don't tell anybody this. God, we've got to keep a rap on this. Got to keep a rap on it. Well, of course. I mean, what do you want to do? Call in the newspaper reporters? No, see, the newspaper reporters are all out in the lobby, and they want to talk to the head of the hospital. What's going on? What's going on? So we can report it in the newspapers. And so the head of the hospital, he says, oh, my God, we got to keep this under wraps. He comes out, and he says, now we do have a We have a problem here. But everything's under control. We've notified the government, and we've notified the CDC, and of course, we're waiting for test results to come back from Atlanta, Georgia, and blah, 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 blah. So that's their official press release. But back behind the scenes, the doctors are sitting there. They're all sweat pouring out on their foreheads, and they're going, oh, my God. So pretty soon, when this message gets to the president in Washington, D.C., he orders, you know, the national surgeon general, you know, in on the king, and they have a big briefing there, you know, in the White House, and they come to the conclusion, oh, my God, this threatens the whole health, safety, and welfare of the nation. So they call out the army, and they surround this town. Nobody goes in, nobody goes out. They're going to have an enforced quarantine. See? That's the plot of the movie. Now, as the movie goes on, of course, the people inside the city are locked in with all of the contagion, aren't they? And so they're all saying, well, we want to get the hell out of here. You know, it's like being in London in the bubonic plague. You know, you just want to get the hell out of Dodge. And, of course, you can't leave. Now, of course, there's people on the outside. You know, they have friends and relatives that are inside the city. They want to get in to visit their friends and relatives, and they can't. Now, as the movie wears on, pretty soon the president comes up to a conclusion. He says, oh, my God, there's no way to stop this disease. We have to terminate it somehow. So they come to the conclusion they're going to set off a couple of big, I don't think it was a nuclear bomb, but it was some kind of a big fireball. At the very end of the movie, they just dropped this bomb on the city and just wiped everybody out. Killed everybody. That was to stop the disease. Well, you know, you might say, well, what in the hell has this got to do with the economy? And that's my point. You see, you are in the midst of an economic meltdown going on worldwide. And the powers that be are denying it. And they're telling you everything's fine. The president was on one news conference the other day, and he says, well, you know, we're having an economic slowdown. And that's why we're putting out this $150 billion stimulus package. So we can nip it in the bud. Well, that's like the captain of the Titanic coming in. He goes out on the deck and he says, now, go on back to your staterooms, everybody. We've had a little brush with an iceberg over here. Nothing to worry about. And we're having a little delay in our arrival in New York, but it'll be temporary, I can assure you. Just sit back and relax. Well, that's to be expected. I mean, after all, the captain of the Titanic can't rush out on deck and say, oh my God, we got a 300-foot hole running down the side of the ship and we're going to sink in 2 hours and 20 minutes. See, that would engender panic and chaos. And we've only got 16 lifeboats, and we want to get as many people into these lifeboats as we can, and we're not going to save everybody on the ship anyway. So we might as well get as many people. Now, line up over here. This is just a precautionary measure. We're going to take all the women and children, put them in the lifeboats, and put them out in the middle of the North Atlantic in the middle of the night, just as a precaution. But don't any of the rest of you worry about a thing. Everything's all right. Everything's under control. My God, you know, you ought to wake up to reality. You know, by the time they're dropping lifeboats off the side of the ship, that should tell you that that's a bad signal, shouldn't it? I mean, if I was standing on the deck watching the lifeboats go over, I'd say, uh-oh. What does the captain know that the rest of us don't know? Now, you can rest assured that George Bush, the president of the United States, who gets a briefing every morning at 10 o'clock from the CIA director, is fully aware of the economic consequences that are coming down on the world and on the dollar and to the United States. That guy is no dummy. He's fully aware of what's going on. Now, of course, in his position as captain of the ship, he's not going to be out here telling you what the real condition of the ship is, which leaves some dumb woman like the one on the Lehrer NewsHour saying, this is the richest nation in the world. I mean, it sounds like, this is the Titanic. It's unsinkable. Well, okay. Popular opinion had it that the Titanic was unsinkable. And it was certainly well built and well constructed. I wouldn't doubt that. But we found out that it indeed was not unsinkable. And that's just the bottom line. I hate to bust your bubble, but that's the way life is. And for people to come to the realization that the United States of America is not the richest nation in the world, and that we're all flat-ass broke. We're in debt up over our eyeballs. We could never pay our debts off in 100,000 lifetimes. Boys and girls, the interest on our debts is growing faster than all of our activities and labors combined can pay. The combined debt of the United States, public and private, is over $150 trillion. Hell, at 5% interest, for crying out loud, it's more than your gross domestic product. I mean, you people can't work hard enough, fast enough, or long enough to pay the debt, let alone pay the interest, let alone pay the debt. So sit back and relax. There's some outcome coming from it. I mean, you know, it's like the Titanic running at 23 knots through a field of icebergs. You know, there's an ultimate end to this. And we saw what the end of that was. Now, after having seen the unsinkable ship sink, captains now in ships are a lot more careful about, you know, running their ships full bore through ice packs. You know, hell, even if it's unsinkable, you know, we use a little more caution than that. All right, so for openers, I wanted to let you know that the housing bubble popped in August of 2007. Now, the housing market peaked. I think the peak was in June of 2005. And here we are, you know, pushing June of 2008, about 36 months later. Now, back in 2002 and 3 and 4, I was advising all of my students, sell your real estate, get out of the stocks and bonds, and concentrate on gold and silver, and before gold and silver, wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil, because you're going to need food, because we're going into famine, world famine. And, of course, you know, when that's going on, people, they looked at me back in 2002 and 3 and 4 and 5 and said, well, you know, Gordon, you're a nice guy, but you're really spaced out. What are you smoking? And so, time went on, and I had a student come in here a couple of years ago, and he was in real estate down in Austin, Texas, and nice young guy, young fellow, college graduate, bright, articulate, educated, literate, reads and writes, and he's in real estate, and so he asked me, well, what do you think, and I told him, and he says, how much time do we have, and I said, well, you're already behind the power curve, son, you should have sold no later than June of 2005. And here it is, June of 2006. But, you know, better late than never. So why don't you sell and take what you can get? And so he went home. He diddled and dallied around for a while. And pretty soon another year goes by. And the other day, as I speak right now, he was here a couple of days ago. And I said, hey, how's things going, Mark? And he said, well, I'm trying to sell out, trying to unwind all of my real estate dealings over there. And I said, well, good. How's that coming down? He's been talking to me over the last year or something. And he said, well, the real estate broker said that if I would put up $20,000, that maybe she could unwind me from my position. So here's a guy with, I don't know how many houses and condominiums and apartments and rentals and one thing and another, you know, pretty good size operation, yeah. And if he'll pay $20,000, we can get you out of this. Woo, that didn't sound very good. Now, I don't know if he could have sold this 2 or 3 years ago at a profit or not. Maybe, maybe not. But it reminded me of the Titanic. See, down in the bowels of the Titanic, way, way down below the waterline in the Titanic, they had a mail room down there. And they had 1,100 bags of mail. And they had 8 postal workers down there. See, their job for 5 days during the crossing was to sort those 1,100 bags of mail. 8 guys are going to sort 1,100 bags of mail. They're going to take all the letters out and put them in a pile, and they're going to sort them out, put them back in the 1,100 bags. And then when the ship docks in New York, they're going to unload them onto a truck, take them down to the post office, and ship them around to where they go. Pretty good plan. So the ship hits the iceberg, and pretty soon the water's coming in, and since the mail room is way, way down in the bottom of the boat, naturally, the boat fills from the bottom to the top, so they were getting water in the mail room, and so their number one priority was to save the mail. And so these 8 guys had to move 1,100 bags of mail. That's a Herculean task by itself. My God, 1,100 bags. They did it. They moved all 1,100 bags out of the mailroom up to the deck right above. About the time they got the mail bags out of the mailroom to the next deck, it was beginning to flood. So their next job was to move 1,100 bags of mail from the deck above the mailroom to the next deck above. But the problems they were facing is, as time went on, the water was coming in faster and faster. In other words, as the ship was sinking in the water, you know, it took them an hour to get the mail moved up to the next deck, but in the next 15 minutes, that deck was underwater. So they finally awakened to the fact, after they spent 1 hour moving mail sacks, that maybe something was bad wrong. And that's my point. See, this young fella, Mark, nice guy. But by the time he spent a year ticking around over his real estate deal over here, by now, it's way too late. Americans today are on the cusp of the Great Depression. I say the Great. We see we had the Great Depression back in the 1930s. We're on the verge of another one, bigger, badder, worser than we had in the 1930s. And the average Joe Sixpack American, he hasn't got a clue that this is about to overwhelm him. But then nobody knew that in 1930 either. Let's just go back to October of 1929. Well, by April of 1930... do you think people were sitting there saying, well, we're in the midst of the Great Depression? No, they didn't know there was a Great Depression coming on. Nobody had ever told them. They hadn't lived through it yet. We hadn't written the history books. In fact, we didn't reach the bottom of the Great Depression until March of 1933. It took 4 years. It took all of 1930, 31, 32, and 3 months of 1933, and 2 or 3 months of 1929, is 3.5 years, to reach the bottom. Hell, boys and girls, the bubble broke in August of 2007. We haven't reached the bottom yet. We won't reach the bottom until we get to about 2010 or 11. And that might not be the bottom. I don't know. You know, I'm just a layman over here watching. We haven't written this history yet. But we can see what's coming, and we can see it right here. Boys and girls, we've never had housing foreclosures in this country at this rate. Not even in the Great Depression. What's going on in California right this minute, as I speak, Californians? You have never had anything like this happen to you before. All of you Westerners out there, on the left side of the 100th meridian, you people ain't never seen this before in history. Now that's where you're at. And hell, we're only into this thing about 6 or 8 months. In 8 months, you've gone further down the hole than we did in the first 3 years in the Great Depression of the 1930s. Boy, that's a signal to us, isn't it? Water's coming in here faster than it did on the Titanic. Oh, wow, that sounds like to me this ship can sink faster than the last one. So, years ago, I was clued into the fact that the great ship America was not bulletproof and that it could sink. And so I said, well, maybe I got to be prepared for that. So I've been telling my students, you know, I think you need to be prepared for this based upon what I read in Matthew chapter 24. I thought maybe Jesus, you know, had his head on straight and wasn't spaced out on something good. So he told us the straight skinny. Here's the way things are going to be. His disciples ask him, hey, tell us how this thing's going to work out. And he said, okay, gather around, kids, and I'll tell you. And he did. He just laid it out in spades. And this is where the rubber meets the road. This is where the bear does it. And I looked at it, and I said, well, if that guy's telling the truth, and if that's the way that deal's going to come down, we need to take action. So when I saw the water coming into the mail room, I didn't waste any time moving mail sacks. I got my hind end up on the top deck and got into the first lifeboat out. That's the way I figured. Well, the lifeboats, you know, are gone, and that's not an option. And for this guy, Mark, selling his real estate is no longer an option. And as we get deeper and deeper into the morass of the next Great Depression, which is already upon us, your options become fewer and fewer and farther between. The option that you had 2 or 3 years ago is gone. And this young fellow, Mark, he thought, well, maybe I'm behind the power curve, but I have high hopes that I can sell out and make $50,000 or $100,000 on my way out of Dodge. Now, it's not only I'm not going to make $50,000 or $100,000, but it's going to cost me $20,000 to get out of Dodge. And he don't have the $20,000. Now what's he going to do? So I made a suggestion to him. I said, well, you know, it's kind of like a chess player. I always look at chess, you know, as a challenge. Like the Titanic. I look at the pieces on the board and I say, oh my God, you're in really a bad position here. Game's not over, you know, it ain't checkmate yet, but you know, you can just look, you don't know how good your opponent is on the other side of the table. You know, I just walked up behind you and I'm taking a look at the pieces on the board and you look up and say, what do you think? And I look down at you and I say, this don't look good, son. Now, you know, if you could make some good moves, and if the other side over there makes a couple, three bad moves that you can capitalize on, but boy, you don't have any room to make any more bad moves. And so Americans today, let me tell you this, you don't have any more room to make bad moves. Every move that you make from now on has got to count. You people got to get your head screwed on here. So I'm going to help you this week to help you get your head screwed on. I want to tell you here, Bob Chapman now is going to help us. This Bob Chapman now, let me tell you who he is. He's with the International Forecaster. It's an international newsletter. And it tells you information that you can't get from Katie Couric and Brian Williams in USA Today. And you're not going to get it from George Bush. Now, these people know what's going on, but they're not reporting it to you. Just like the captain of the Titanic is not going to tell you this ship is going to sink in 2 hours and 20 minutes. Now, all of these people know that the great ship America is sinking, and he is going to sink. There's no doubt in anybody's mind. We all know it's coming. We don't know just when. We don't know exactly what the circumstances are going to be, and we don't know exactly what the casualty count's going to be, but it's going to be high. Now, our objective here, boys and girls, is for us to get off. Our job is to get off, and we want to live to sail another day. And it's still possible to live to sail another day. But if you think you're going to sell your real estate and score a big hit, let me invite you down to the mailroom to move some mail sacks. And while you're thinking about moving mail sacks, let me remind you that you have and are listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard in more than 112 countries daily over the Internet and radio. For more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law. From the scriptural perspective, that's 8 schools in all. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. And the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has a radio log schedule and archives that can be accessed through the webpage as well. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. And the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors or publications that we endorse and recommend will necessarily reciprocate. Now, keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be, and often are, hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about the richest nation on earth, richest country in the world. Now, there's various ways, I guess, of determining what the wealth of the United States is. Could it be done with how much money do we have in the bank? How much do each of us have as individuals? Let me give you another little piece of information here. You'll like this. Have you got $2,200 cash? $2,200. You don't even have to have it in cash. I mean, you could hold $2,200 in something, you know, like a, you know, like wheat, corn, beans, honey, or oil. I don't care what you got it in. But here's the proviso. You have to own it free and clear. You can't owe any debt on it, and you can't have any debt. You have to be debt free with $2,200 in the world. Well, if you're debt-free. Now, this is the system that we used to use in this country. We used to figure that a man's wealth was based upon his balance sheet. And your balance sheet said, here's what my assets are and here's what my liabilities are. And you subtract your liabilities from your asset, and that number tells you how wealthy you are. Did you know that most Americans, more than half of us, if you look at our balance sheets, we have a negative? We not only have a negative savings rate, we have a negative net worth. And it's getting worse because, you see, we used to think that our houses had value. But now since the housing bubble burst, you know, you had this $300,000. I got a daughter. She had a $232,000 house in 2000. The value escalated to $650,000, and now it's going back down. I don't know where it is on the scale of value. It's probably more than 232, but something less than 650. I don't know where it's at. But she's losing money every day. As the housing bubble unwinds, put in perspective, had she sold it at 650, which was the top of the market in June of 2005, and put it into gold, she'd have more money today. See, her $650,000 would be in gold, and then the gold has gone up in value by about double. So she'd have $1,000,000 too. She'd have the gold in a pile over here somewhere. Well, she's still got the house, but she's got a mortgage on the house. See? Now, if she misses the mortgage payment, the house can be taken away from her. And the worst thing that can happen to you is that you got a $600,000 house with a $100,000 mortgage and you lose your job. That's bad. That's like trying to move mail sacks out of the mailroom of the Titanic. I mean, that ain't a good place to be at all. So, you know, you tuck these little things away over time, and we come to a conclusion, and that is you subtract your liabilities from your assets. Now, if you did that, and you have $2,200 in this world, you're rich. And here's the story. A global study reveals an overwhelming wealth gap, with the world's three richest people having more money than the poorest 48 nations combined. God, that was a revelation. That's Bill Gates, Warren Buffett, and one other guy. He's down in Mexico City, and I can't pronounce his name. Those three men have more wealth than the poorest 48 nations on planet Earth combined. Now, there's 192 countries in the United Nations, and I think there's 208 countries in the world. Out of 200 countries in the world, these three men have more wealth than the poorest 48. The richest 2% of the world's population owns more than half of the world's household wealth. Okay, 2% of us own half of the world's household wealth. Now, you may believe that you've heard this statistic before, but you haven't. You haven't. For the first time, personal wealth, not income, we're not talking about how much money do you make every month. We're talking about how much do you physically own. It's been measured now around the world, and the findings may be surprising. Because what makes people wealthy across the world spectrum is a relatively low bar. I knew a guy one time down in Salt Lake City, Utah, this many years ago, and the guy had two Rolls-Royce cars. He was a real estate broker. It was back in the housing boom, you know, boom years of the 70s. And God, I really looked up to this guy. I thought, wow, this guy is really something. He's driving two Rolls-Royces. At the time, I was driving a 64 Chevy, 64 Chevy Impala. 65. It was a 65 Chevy Impala. And this guy's driving a Rolls Royce. Not one, two. He's got two of these Rolls Royces. Lives in a nice house in the suburbs of Salt Lake City, you know, up in the mountains, up in the hills behind the city. And I thought, God, this guy's got the world by the short hairs. Well, when the market collapsed, remember at the end of the 70s, you know, real estate, you know, the whole damn economy went upside down. Interest rates hit 21%. Housing went into the doldrums, just like is going on right now. And at the time, we thought the end of the world was coming. Hell, I thought, what's upon us right now today in 2008? I thought that was upon us in 1980. Well, anyway, that one day I took a load of furniture down to Colin and for a sale. And I was in his office, and we were chit-chatting a little bit, and he was talking about Bob out here. And he says they've repossessed both of Bob's Rolls. Repossessed his Rolls. I was as shocked as I was when the Jew told me that he had a mortgage on his house. I never heard of such a thing. I didn't know real estate brokers had mortgages. I thought real estate brokers were filthy rich, had money in the bank and money in their pockets, and the world owed them a living, and they'd already collected. Furthermore, he was in the process of being repossessed. They were repossessing his house, which is what I just reported to you before the break. You know, they're repossessing the guy's house. Then it dawned on me, I said, oh my God, this guy is just a shell. He really doesn't have any money. He's just running around here driving a Rolls Royce because he can make the payments on it. That was a big revelation. Of course, you know, that's 30 years ago, and 30 years ago, you know, I was young and dumb, and I was driving my 65 Chevy Impala, hell, bought and paid for. I didn't owe any money on that. Wasn't much of a car, but I wasn't making payments. See, I actually owned everything that I had, being an old country boy and all. You know, I thought, well, that's probably the best way to go, especially after I lost my shirt in real estate down in California. So I was going back on my second fortune about that time. Now, the research indicates that assets of just $2,200 per adult places a household in the top half of the world's wealthiest. So if you take 6.25 billion people in the world, if you got $2,200, you're in that top 50%. Guess what, boys and girls? More than half of the people in the United States of America, and I'll just bet you that you people down in Australia and Canada, I bet you're in the same boat that we are. I'll just bet you that half the people in Australia and New Zealand do not have a balance sheet that would show $2,200. $2,200. Ask yourself, do I have $2,200? Most of you have more than that on your credit card. Now take a look at all of your debts, add them all up, and what do you got? Now, a lot of you people out there could probably say, well, yeah, I've got the $2,200. Have you programmed in the $30,000 that you owe per capita here in the United States on your prorated share of the national debt at $9 trillion? Did you budget that in? Oh, you didn't. Okay. Now, did you notice the Bear Stearns bailout? Did you notice that the Wall Street banks and brokerage houses are being bailed out by the Federal Reserve? Do any of you people have any comprehension as to who the surety underwriters are of this bailout going on here in the United States? Surety underwriters. You ever heard? That's a big word. You know what that means? That means, in biblical terms, cosigners. guess who the co-signers are guaranteeing this J.P. Morgan bailout of Bear Stearns? $30 billion. Actually, we found out 8:30. It's now $55 billion. That was in the latest international forecaster. Guess who gets to underwrite all that? Well, all you taxpayers out there. I mean, all you people with Social Security numbers and federal tax ID numbers are the surety underwriters. You know how I know that? Because the prima facie evidence under the Uniform Commercial Code of the surety underwriter is the Social Security account number. And you'll find that in Title 42, Section 301 through 335. Go read them and weep. So if you're an American taxpayer, now what is an American taxpayer? That's a guy that's got a taxpayer ID number. If you get a Social Security number, boys and girls, can you say Social Security account? Can you say Social Security account? Okay, you're a taxpayer. Okay, boys and girls, you're on the hook for $43 trillion more in what we call unfunded government obligations. You got $9 trillion funded, and you got $43 trillion unfunded, and that J.P. Morgan Bear Stearns buyout is called an unfunded liability. Did you know that? I took a look at that years ago, and I said, I'm not sure this Social Security account taxpayer status over here is good for me, so I opted out. I went up to the front of the Titanic, and I lashed 25 deck chairs together, and I said, I might not get into a lifeboat, but I'm going to come up to the bow of the ship, and when the bow of the ship goes down underwater, I'm going to step onto my lifeboat and then sail off into the Atlantic all by myself. I did that years ago. I've been suggesting to my students that they do that, and I like to suggest to my students that they do that right now. Now, Bob Chapman here in the International Forecaster came up with a number here. It was three or four issues back, and he said he recommended that you have a seven-month supply of food on hand. And I was wondering, you know, this is three or four weeks ago. This is before they started rationing rice at Sam's and Costco. Remember that little story? Brian Williams was on here a couple nights ago. This is brand news, breaking news, you know, as I make this program. Brian Williams was reporting on the cost of rice. Well, the price of rice has gone up double in the last 90 days. If I would have told you 5 years ago that we're headed for a worldwide famine, you people laughed at me. You said, well, you're nuts. Well, Brian Williams reported this on the NBC News. A correspondent was out in the streets, and he was in the Costco's, and he was in the Sam's, and he was interviewing people and one thing and another, and they're rationing the rice now, you know. And so when the segment was over, Brian Williams gasped and said, unbelievable. Yes, sir, Brian, that is unbelievable, because here in the United States, we haven't had rationing since the end of World War II, 1945, last year of rationing. You Englishmen had it until 1951. I don't know about the Australians and the Canadians, but you know, you Europeans went through that World War II, not only had rationing, you had absolute privation in Germany. Now, I don't know where Bob Chapman got his seven-month number. Because I was reading Howard Ruff here, and Howard Ruff's recommending 1 year. 1 year. Of course, Howard Ruff's a Mormon, and the Mormons have had that 1 year thing going on for a long time. Now, the Mormons used to have a 7 year food storage program, then they knock it down to four, and then they knock it down to two, now they're down to one. Last time I heard it was 72 hours, because they're all relying on FEMA. Hey, all you Mormons out there, wake up. Did you pay attention to New Orleans and FEMA? Just thought I'd throw that one out for you. Yeah, New Orleans and FEMA. If you people didn't learn anything from that FEMA escapade down there in New Orleans, you know, you people have to be brain dead. If you're waiting on government to save your ass out of this deal, you guys, you need some heavy-duty stuff to start smoking. Get your mind off of what's coming. All right, now with that in mind, then, I just want to bring up these little points here, because we got a woman over here who says America's the richest nation in the world. Half the people in the United States of America do not have a balance sheet that would show $2,200 net.
Now, that doesn't mean there aren't some people in this country that have a balance sheet with a lot of money on it. Now, let me tell you one more little thing over here. You may have a balance sheet that has a positive side to it right now, but the positive side of a balance sheet is predicated upon the presumption that you can sell it. You can sell it. Now, I told you already about this young fellow, Mark. This guy is sitting on God knows how much real estate. I mean, you know, if he went down there and he said, well, how much real estate do you have? I imagine the guy would say, oh, I got $1 million worth of real estate. Well, what's the rent? Well, $30,000 a month. Here's a guy with $1 million worth of real estate, and he's taking in $30,000 a month. And maybe he's got a 50 or 75 or 100, I don't know, how many units. All right. But when you get down on the bottom line, what can you cash this out for? What can you sell this for? Well, I'm underwater by $20,000. That's the best case scenario. Underwater $20,000. What that means is all of my assets are worth $20,000 less than I owe. I owe more on the car than it's worth. Okay, so the car is not an asset, it's a liability. His real estate isn't an asset, it's a liability. It's a rock. It's a stone. A millstone around his neck, that's what it is. You need to get that millstone off your neck, kid. That's step number one. Get the damn millstone off your neck. It's going to be hard to swim out there with that millstone. And first thing, get the hell out of your stateroom. Get up on deck. Well, the water's cold. Yep, the water's going to be cold. But we got to figure out a way to survive this thing. This ship's going to sink, kids. Wake up. Smell the coffee. And that isn't the way it is because I said so. I'm just a reporter. I'm just here, and I'm going to give you some reports. I got about 20. See, I got 28 reports here. I can't even cover 28 reports in 7 days. We're going to cover a bunch of reports here on the richest nation on earth. I mean, we got a girl, more likely with a college degree, says that you people in America are owed. You have a right to national health care insurance. Hell, you people can't even balance your budget. Boys and girls, here in America, I cannot remember the last time we had a balanced budget in our federal government. Now, we've had two or three since World War II. Out of 50 or 60 years since the end of World War II, we have had two or three balanced budgets. I can't remember which years they were. And as each budget deficit has stacked up, we now owe $9 trillion. Now we're bogged down in a couple of wars that are eating up on, God knows. Bob Chapman's estimating, based upon the numbers they're trying to put together, the total actual real budget deficit here in the United States is going to top $1 trillion in 2008. Fiscal year 2008 ends October the 1st. $1 trillion. That's $1,000 billion. Now, they're going to advertise that it's around $400 billion, but they're not telling you the truth. In fact, they're lying to you. They're telling us a lot of lies over here. Now, our government officials, as well as banking and corporate leaders, have created a culture permeated with pathological liars and sociopaths. They subscribe to the same situational ethics, which they are teaching to our children in our public schools so that they can grow up to be miscreants just like them. And some of them may even believe their own lies, being unable any longer to separate truth from fiction any longer because the lying has become so rampant and so pervasive. Some have probably even forgotten what the real truth is, having not entertained it or even thought about it for decades now. And who can blame the ones who have? For the real truth is nothing less than terrifying. I gotta underline that. Boys and girls, the real truth of our predicament is nothing less than terrifying. If you knew the extent of the damage, you too would be terrified. And that's why you're not being told the real truth about the real damage to the economy. And for all the rest of you people out there in the world, understand this. When the United States of America catches cold, the rest of you people are going to get pneumonia. This is the world's biggest economy. when this thing turns turtle, you people in China aren't getting out of this thing free and clear. You people in Japan, hey, wait a minute, wake up over there in Tokyo. You people in Australia and South America now in the United States. I mean, y'all hate us. I don't deny it. And you all have good reason to, because we're real jerks. But when the United States economy goes upside down, the rest of you people are going to be in the North Atlantic treading water, just like we are. Now, boy, this is going to be a bloodbath. This is going to be something never before seen on planet Earth. In fact, I'll close with this little reminder. Jesus made an observation one time. It was in Matthew chapter 24. It's about verse 22, as I recall. And here's what he said about this. He said, except those days should be shortened, there would no flesh be saved alive. But for the elect's sake, those days shall be shortened. Now, we got some bad characters running around the world. You know, we used to have the old Soviet Union. Okay. Well, the Soviet Union collapsed back about 1989. Remember that? All right. Now, the United States of America is in the process of collapse, economic collapse. That does not mean that all the people of America die of Lassa fever or Ebola over the weekend. That isn't the way the deal comes out. All the Russians are still there. They're all still there. They went through their economic collapse. Their ship sank. They all got wet. Many of them died. Their economy, their empire was dismantled. But they're making a comeback. They're making a comeback. They got a guy over there named Putin, Vladimir Putin. Now, this guy's a communist, a dedicated, hardcore communist, and he's got a goal in mind. He's got an agenda. He wants to take over the world. And at the very same time that the American empire is collapsing, the Russian empire is coming to the forefront. I mean, these guys are making money hand over fist. They've got money flowing into their treasury faster than they know what to do with it. They're unloading dollars as fast as they can. They're stockpiling gold like it's going out of style. Their economy is growing by leaps and bounds. And I want to point out, boys and girls, they all got nuclear weapons. That's right, nuclear weapons. Boy, that doesn't bode well for us. And those Chinese over there, their economy has grown so fast, they don't know where to put all the money. They got so much money, it's coming in so fast, they haven't got places to stuff it. And they got the world's biggest army, and they also are nuclear tipped. Boys and girls, that does not bode well for Australia. I always tell my Australian audience, I just look north. Look up north. You got three. You know, you got 1.3 billion of them up there, all looking south. Well, all right, kids, I'm about out of time, so I'm going to have to leave it right there. We'll be back again tomorrow night, same time, same station, talking to you about this richest nation on earth. That's us here in America. They think we're the richest nation on earth. All right, so let me remind you here that you have been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. And we're heard in 100 countries plus daily over the Internet and radio. Now, if you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Remember, the law school is a private, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.